Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 17 of season 5. This one is called The Outcast. It was directed by Robert Shearer, written by Jerry Taylor. It aired back on March 16th, 1992. In this one, the Enterprise is contacted by a race called the Janai, who have no gender. Riker falls in love with one of them. Stuff happens, and then we get a resolution. Clay is here to talk about this one, so right after this, me and Clay are going to go deep on The Outcast.
There you are, Commander. I wondered what had happened to our guest of honor.
I just needed some air. I could only take so much of those social functions, and I need to breathe a little.
I would think you had attended so many affairs like this that it had become second nature to you.
I was raised outdoors. I've never been very comfortable in crowded rooms.
What do you think of our planet? Isn't it beautiful?
Yes, it is. It's beautiful.
We have many varieties of plant life. Perhaps you would like to inspect some of them?
Yes, I would. I've always been interested in exobotany.
Well, welcome to our discussion of The Outcast, otherwise known as the episode where Geordi inexplicably has a beard.
Oh, yeah.
What'd you think of Geordi's beard? He actually has it in three episodes, not in a row. They're sort of scattered throughout the remaining parts of the series, but are you pro or con Geordi's beard?
I just wish he had pushed it further and it had turned into like him slowly copying the way that Riker looked.
Yeah.
So first he gets the beard, and then he puts on like 30 pounds.
He starts wearing red. Doesn't make any. No one mentions anything about it. The weirdest part is
he's always got 1 foot up on the dilithium crystal chamber.
That's right. Yeah, I didn't mind it. Amy really liked it. She's like, "Wow, he should have kept that." Apparently, the producers did not like it. It makes sort of sense to me, as even though, you know, engineering in this 24th century is all clean and there's no real, like, getting your hands dirty aspect to it, I feel like the engineers should have a beard. It feels more engineer-y to have a beard, as opposed to the clean-cut command. But, yeah, we're going to talk about The Outcast, which is the episode we just watched. I guess another sort of way to go into this one is... I guess it's kind of a weird one to talk about. It's very hit or miss. I'll start there with in terms of other reviews that I've read for it. I think that it's a tough episode to talk about because I think the way that people talk about it is really zeitgeist dependent. Like what's going on in the culture determines how you're supposed to react to this episode.
Right.
I thought it was just kind of a middle of the road show. I think I try to avoid, you know, getting too into the weeds about like the sort of I guess zeitgeist way to go about it. But as an episode itself, I thought it was kind of middle of the road. What would you end up thinking?
Well, I find this is a really interesting episode, not just because of the subject matter, but because the B plot in this story is probably the most boring fucking thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
The cold open to this has to be the worst cold open to any episode I've ever seen.
Right.
Where they just shoot a probe into space and it disappears and they're like, huh. And then that's the whole cold open.
Yeah, they just like it stopped responding. And then, yeah, it's a very like anticlimactic. It's like, really? It's not going to blow up or anything like that? It's just going to disappear.
And like you can see how much... how little budget they had to spend for this episode, because so much of it is just talking in rooms.
Yeah.
Because there is so much digital display animation in this episode, more than I think I've seen in any episode of the show.
Yep.
It's like any chance they have, they cut to a display where there's some sort of digital wireframe model or a fully rendered 3D model spinning.
Yep.
There's one point where it looks like they're giving a talk using a Dr. Mario setup with like a galaxy in the middle. But it's really fascinating because I find the stuff with Riker and the I don't remember what the species is called.
Janae, something like that. With Soren is the name of the
Soren. Yeah, okay.
Which is weirdly ironic that we were just talking about Generations.
Yeah, yeah. The stuff with Riker and Soren I found really fascinating, if not to the point where I think they should have pushed it a little bit more. But I feel like the people writing the episode felt the same way, where it's like, well, shit, we actually have to have them do something. As much as we'd really like to have them just have a talk for an hour, they have to do something. So I guess we'll put them together in a what the hell are those things called?
Are you talking about the white when they're actually in the shuttlecraft?
Shuttlecraft. Like, the word escaped me. Yeah, where they're in the shuttlecraft, and it's like, well, we should probably tighten these screws while we talk about gender politics.
Yeah, right. And when they rescue the other crew is also amazingly boring because it's just the camera looking at them typing on a computer, sort of talking gibberish about what it's taking to save these other people. And then they just beam out at the end, and it's like, wow, that was really, really dull what just happened there.
They may as well be putting together like IKEA furniture or something.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we've talked before about how it's really obvious in the sort of mediocre episodes of the B plot when they just kind of stick it in. They're like, we have to have a sci-fi angle to this story,
right?
I felt that this one was dull, but I didn't feel its insertion was like egregious to the point where it's like, oh, this doesn't even make sense that this is happening in this episode. It's really just a launching pad, and I think they don't spend that much time on it, really. It's honestly probably like 5 minutes of screen time. It's just so boring, it probably feels like it's stretched out longer than what they actually do.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that it's a really dull plot setup to set up what the A story is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's the concept of null space, I think they call it, is just like a white room. It's like an Apple ad where the ship just exists in there. And
they just crash landed inside the Matrix.
Yeah, that's right. The gun racks are going to fly up the sides and everything. Yeah, and then, I don't know, I guess it sucks out energy and then the ship explodes for some reason, which makes no sense to me.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, it's
those. You know, I'll be honest with you. Between that and what happens in the next episode we cover, I feel like they really should have some non-explosive materials on these ships, especially in the control panels.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it's always the control panel on the bridge is the first thing to burst into flames, and that's never a good sign.
Yeah, they're post-circuit breaker in the 21st century, and apparently they haven't come up with any like better solution to just kicking out a fuse or something like that. It's true, the things always blow up, and they're very flammable. They just go up.
Yes, yep. So. Yeah, well, I mean, we'll get to it the next one, but in the next one, the bridge actually catches fire.
And yesterday's Enterprise, there was a fire on the bridge, you know, where they did that shot where the flames are in front of the Picard.
Oh, right.
At the very end. So, yeah, burning is a lot of carpet in there that's very flammable. Yeah. So I guess the way to go about it is I'll start off with, I think, my biggest problem with this episode, and then you can tell me what you think. I think that the actress who plays Soren is not very good. And particularly her monologue at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
The monologue scene as a whole, I think, fails on pretty much every level, from like writing to direction to acting. It's like the trifecta of a bad scene.
Mm-hmm.
She's much better early on in the scenes with Riker by himself. So I don't know if it's just sort of the ham-fistedness of the ending. But to me, this episode feels a little bit sledgehammery.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, it's not too bad in the beginning, but that courtroom scene, while I appreciate what they're trying to do, it is very sledgehammery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The ending certainly is. I feel it strikes me as a story that doesn't come about as you have this story and this thing would fit nicely. It's more we have this concept. let's write this relationship around this concept.
Mm-hmm.
Although I
mm-hmm.
will say that we talked in the past about how the relationship episodes are tough to do in 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's I mean that's the big one of the biggest things for me is if, with this episode is again, I love what they're trying to do and I like the approach that they're taking. I just don't think they went far enough with it cuz you've got and I mean I don't know if that's a question of time constraints or if it's a question of the time period in which this was going to be on broadcast television.
Yep.
But Riker goes from kind of amused to I love you with pretty much zero ramp up.
Yeah,
like there's
yep.
no escalation in their relationship whatsoever. They make out once and then he's like, but no, I'm going to leave to the point where he has to have the conversation with Troy that he's met someone.
Yes, that's a very weird scene. That's a very he's never done that before. So I guess it's to show us how serious he is, but it comes across as very unnecessary on his part to go in and tell Troy this. I agree with that. It's I feel it's tough to do it in the 45 minutes. I feel they do an okay job in general. Like it escalates a little bit more naturally than other episodes like The Host that we've seen, where I didn't buy that relationship at all. I kind of mm-hmm. buy this. It seems super rushed. It never really gets to the point where Riker's considering throwing everything away, but the other characters are telling him that's what he's considering.
Right. And I don't think it's that I find it less believable, because I don't. I think it's perfectly fine. It's just the quickness at which it escalates does not feel right at all.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, I mean, I'm sure that's just a question of his whole side of the equation is sorely lacking in this episode.
Riker's, you mean?
Yes. Yeah.
You feel he's just like a passenger on this story that's getting.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I mean, it's tough because I feel like this opinion that I have might be me wishing they had made a different episode kind of thing, which is a little unfair to criticize. But I feel like it seems like that this story should be more about Riker's conflicted feelings.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's not. He doesn't really show many feelings whatsoever. It's all about the Soren's feelings.
Yeah, yeah. That's.
And it's kind of a weird line to ride. I think you can come away seeing it as really offensive, but also not at all. It's completely subjective as how you read this episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of reviews a lot of people I guess were upset with the show. This is sort of a mindset I don't really understand. Like they got a lot of obviously when you create something you're going to get a lot of opinions from a lot of people, a lot of mm-hmm. it which is not particularly valid. I think you can objectively say that it's not valid. They got a lot of things saying that this was an anti-gay show. I mean, I don't really understand that. I think that you know I don't know if it ties into there's one mistake I think that they do make, which is I find the scene where Picard and Riker are talking the first scene.
Mm-hmm.
I find Picard to be weirdly cold in that episode to what's going on with Riker. He doesn't even give the line, I'm sorry, Will, but I can't do this. You know, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. he's just like, well, you know, I can try to talk to him, but you know, it's probably not going to happen. I don't know what to tell you. And the scene at the very end is way, way better because you get Picard is talking to him on face value about what their mission, their upcoming mission is going to be, but there's a subtext of he's concerned about him.
Right.
You know, he's like, what do I tell them when we leave? Like, are you done with your business here? And that's much better writing. Picard just kind of comes off as a little cold, and I don't feel that the show could have ended. This is like the best ending for the show. I don't think the show is mm-hmm. condoning what happened, but what's the other option? Riker takes her away and then we never see her again because you can't have this continuing character on the show.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I don't view it as anti-gay at all. It feels incredibly pro-gay.
Yeah.
If not that in general, it's just the general message that it seems to be putting across is that, you know, your normal is not necessarily everybody's normal.
Sure, yep.
And you know, that what is normal. Then there's everybody's normal. It's just, you know, certain constructs put in place, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the ending, there are people criticizing the ending where Soren comes back rehabilitated as the part.
Yeah. I think some people think that it's the show trying to show both sides of the argument. I don't think it is. Like,
no, not at all. I mean, I don't read it that way at all. I mean, clearly they've set up this rehabilitation thing as something awful and against the nature of the person.
Yep.
And, you know, she comes back basically brainwashed, and I don't think for a second you're supposed to be like, oh yeah, well maybe they have a point.
Right. Yeah, right. They did sad music and everything.
Especially I don't know how you can think that after that courtroom scene.
Right.
Because that courtroom scene is so very specifically laying out a point of view.
Yep.
That to think that they're just being like, well, you know, there's something to be said about, you know, rehabilitation and nature over, you know, choice and all that kind of, that seems ridiculous to
me. No, I agree. I don't think that's a valid argument. I don't think it's a valid opinion of sort of what the show is trying to do. It's I will say about the ending, let me know what you thought. Me and Amy both thought that we came to the same conclusion at the same time. We both kind of wished that the ending was more like 1984, the Orwell book. Where not that Riker would cause the betrayal, but that they're at the end, she's so brainwashed that they recognize each other, but it's like they don't know each other anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, in 1984, Winston betrays Julia, and then he sees her at the end, but he's been completely broken at that point to where he sort of has a memory of her, but it's like he can't understand why he ever felt that way.
Okay.
Here, she remembers a little bit too much, I think. And it's not just like it's not like he breaks in and she's like, no, I'm happy here. You know, she's like, she acknowledges a little bit too much of what has happened in the past, I think. And it gets rid of a little bit of the tragedy, I think, of if it was like a totally cold break that the brainwashing had like totally fundamentally changed her.
Yeah, I was expecting one of those things where she's like, the stuff that she's saying is like towing the party line kind of stuff.
Right.
Like she's been changed, but like you can see tears coming out of her eyes or something like that.
Yep. Yep.
You know, that sort of thing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. First of all, that whole scene is kind of ridiculous where Riker and Worf go down to the planet in their tactical cable knit sweaters.
Their ninja gear, their Starfleet ninja gear. I just, I was laughing because it's a funny episode for Worf, and I get the distinct impression he just wanted to go kill Janai, and that's why he wanted to go. Because he has that weird poker scene where he's like, they give me the heebie-jeebies.
I loved that scene.
I did too. It made me
Because
it made me laugh.
I loved Worf's racism. I thought it was awesome.
Yep.
Because
or sexism, I guess. Or something.
Yeah, I don't know. He's
I guess
he's
he is
talking
racist,
about
yeah.
a people as yeah. in general, so it's more of a racist or a specious kind
yeah,
of
thing. Yeah, that's true.
And I thought it was great because, you know, as much as Worf is a enlightened member of Starfleet, he's also a Klingon.
Yep.
And Klingons have very, you know, he kind of has the same opinions as your 70-year-old single uncle.
Yes.
You know,
yep.
Who's been divorced 3 times. And, you know, I the only thing that I didn't like in that episode, that scene was when he was talking about how weak women are. Because, I mean, well, aren't Klingon women, like, really fucking strong and really powerful?
And Worf also has huge respect for, like, Tasha Yar. Like, I felt that...
As you all should.
I felt that they... I like that scene. I'm not sure how well it fits to the Worf character, some of the writing. Like, he goes a little bit too far, and it's a little bit of the sledgehammeriness that we were talking about. Like,
right.
He doesn't need to be that crazy. He serves with a lot of women, and he's had lines before about how Klingon women are just as strong as the men, you know?
Right, right. Well, I'm really glad that they gave that scene to Worf and not some fucking throwaway ensign that you never see.
Yeah,
ensign
racist who comes into the poker and never is seen again.
You see, that seems like something they would be very prone to do, is just have some random character be super racist or super prejudiced or super sexist and then, you know, have them get smacked down and never show up.
They blow up in the shuttlecraft.
Yeah, but giving that trait to a main character, I think, is really interesting, and it makes that discussion have a little bit more weight to it.
Yeah.
And also, I like that they, you know, the thing that I really do like about this episode is they kind of don't shy away from talking about any of that stuff.
Yes.
Which is really nice. But again, I think they could have gone a lot further with it.
I was watching it, and I think it goes to the zeitgeist thing earlier. I was like, the show felt, it must just be a point where we are in our culture now, where the show felt like more progressive in some ways than now. Like, I think it's just that I absorb so much of this media on like Twitter and like the news and everything, where you're just like hyper aware of the issue to a point where discussion of it makes you throw up like hands over your ears. It's not like it's almost like it's, you're like, oh, the show can't possibly be doing it correctly. And it's weird because what the show is talking about is this sort of, I don't even know if it's dated, but you wouldn't hear this discussion of there's like obvious difference between the sexes at a certain point. Mm-hmm. Like they go on to, the show is like, well, we're all equal, but there are clear differences. Like men are stronger in the upper body, like physically and things like that. Women give birth. It was an interesting sort of mix of when it came out in 1991 or 92, mm-hmm. whenever this was, about like what the tone of the discussion was.
Well, I like that scene because I watched it a couple times and I was trying to unpack it a little bit more. And the thing that's interesting about it is it seems tonally correct for Riker, like what he's telling her.
Yeah.
And but, you know, even if you take that out of the equation, I mean, when you're dealing with this sort of, if an alien were to come to you and ask you what the difference between men and women are, it's a fairly honest, or at least as far as Riker goes, a fairly honest answer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that alien is specifically interested in what the differences are.
Sure.
And he's trying to illustrate that in a way that's not, you know, I mean, I really like how awkward he is trying to do it.
Yep, yep. Tell me about your sexual organs.
Yeah. This episode should be called Riker Eyebrow Raise the Episode. Because he does that about 8 times, where he does that eyebrow raise and then turns to the right or something.
Yeah, he's got his eyebrow down. It's we've found a point where you can sort of catch him off guard or embarrass him about sexuality. This alien has actually found that mark, which had been previously undiscovered. Yeah.
Which apparently he finds really sexy.
Yes, it gets him going. Because he's talking about what he likes in a woman, he likes someone who can challenge him, I guess. Which ties into the I thought it was a great line because of the Roe sexual tension that we talked about.
Oh, yeah.
Like someone who stands up to him is something that gets him interested in them.
Yeah, I thought all of those scenes, not even just with Riker. I mean, because I think they balance it out well. I mean, obviously they do more with Riker because she's. Saren is, you know, into Riker,
yep.
But they do one with Crusher as well, which, I don't know, it's the kind of thing where it's like, I feel like maybe these scenes would be, you could make the argument that these scenes would work better if the end game wasn't that Saren was attracted to Riker.
She's just sort of interested in the process?
Yeah, just like generally, instead of, you know, it's like she meets Riker and all of a sudden she, you know, starts to swoon over this hunky male.
Yep.
But the questions that she's asking are fairly innocuous and fairly, you know, she's asking Crusher what's different about being a woman, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I think it would have been really bad if, and this is like a season one kind of thing, if like later on Saren shows up and she's got like lipstick
yes,
on or something
yeah,
that, like that.
That would have been terrible. Put on, get her fingernails painted and everything like that. Or grown her hair out. She kept her hair the same.
Yeah. I mean, but it's like, I think the answers that Crusher gives are interesting and good and equal to the way that Riker answers the questions. And I think both of those scenes are pretty solid.
Yeah. 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 I agree. Even the poker scene, I think Worf's a little bit over the top, but I appreciate how, I appreciate that the character sticks to his guns through it. It also makes me laugh just the ending where his line about with all these wild cards I can't even tell what's in my fucking hand just continues on. That's a I kind of agree with him about wild cards and poker. Now, there's a point where there's too many wild cards. There's no need for that many wild cards.
I just wish that he had been more consistent through the episode, because, like, to have, I don't know if it's a way of being like, well, we had him say some pretty prejudiced shit earlier, we need to redeem his character by having him go down and help Riker. That seems completely out of left field.
Yeah, well, he's got this, when Worf brings it up, he's got this weird smile on his face, like he's dying to go down there and do this. So I
and commit some hate crimes.
he's dying to go down and beat up androgynous women folk, I guess. It just strikes me as very, I don't know what the point of sending him down was, because he doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, I don't know. That whole sequence feels, I mean, again, I don't know what the ending is. I kind of feel like they should have ended it with, the end should have been Saren being taken away.
And you just never see her again?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because that scene where they have to go down and try and break her out seems really kind of forced, and then I don't know. I think I don't know if there's a way to do that same thing without,
well,
without it being straight up boring.
Well, I mean, why can't they just transport Riker to whatever room she's in? You know, you can avoid the whole break-in scene. Just have him beam down to whatever, like, you know, rehab facility room she's in, and, you know, the guards can burst in and he can just beam out at that point. Like, there's no reason for this ninja style sneaking around and doing like backflips in the vegetation.
Right, right.
I would have been totally fine with that, and they didn't do that. I guess that's just the style of storytelling that they want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a,
and I don't know. I guess they need to have some sort of a twist, make it seem like he's succeeding, and then but also have some action involved, or I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. It's it has another great. They're really pushing the limits of Riker's pickup lines, where he says he's very interested in exobiology, which is a wonderful, which is a wonderful pickup line. All that stuff. It's all very good.
And I don't think I ever want to hear Jonathan Frakes say the term inseminating a husk ever again.
It was filthy. I would have covered a child's ears if they were in the room when Riker started talking about those husks. So, do these aliens actually have a sex?
I don't know. I mean, they never really cover that.
Yeah, they say the parents are both involved in the, like, reproduction of the husk, but right. They don't, and they say they've sort of evolved past, I think they say they've evolved past gender. So I don't know if they actually have different sexes and they just totally avoid it.
Yeah, I don't know. Which brings me to another thing that I was thinking about in one of the ways I don't think they pushed this far enough. How much do you think this story changes, at least in the way it's viewed, if the person playing Saren is a male actor?
I don't think it changes at all. It slightly becomes more distracting to a mainstream audience.
That's the thing. Like, I feel like if they really wanted to push this, they should have done something like that. Because, I mean, clearly it's clear that actor is a woman.
Yep.
So I think it makes what happens in the episode a little bit more palatable, easy to digest for a television audience in the early 90s.
Right. Well, it's what happens does not become distracting because of, you don't lose focus on what this show is trying to say the story is. If it was a male, you would have been like, wow, Riker's making out with a dude. Like, how progressive. It would have just been distracting from the story, which I think the narrative also does a good job of spinning how they're portraying the aliens and turning it into a, like, a gay or transgender story. You know what I mean? Like, it does it very, it sort of swings on that pivot kind of nicely. Yeah. And I think that, as you mentioned before, it's not really a Riker story here.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I think, I guess I kind of feel like it should be, but it's not, I can't really, you know, that's not the story that they made.
Right,
so.
Yeah, yeah.
Like but it feels like there should be more at stake or more confusion isn't the word, but
like Riker has to somehow come to a, like, Riker has to make a sacrifice in some ways about
yeah,
this.
or at least
not a sacrifice, but like he has to re-examine his notions.
Yeah, I think there's when you're putting I was trying to think if there was any other character you could do this story with, and it's like, well, you can't really do it with Picard.
Yep.
You can't really do it with Worf, because he's clearly prejudiced as hell. And you can't really do it with Geordi, because Geordi's just a fucking creep.
Right, yeah.
So it has to be Riker. But on the other hand, it's like, well, it's kind of weird putting this non-gendered character together with Captain Oversex.
Yes.
And yeah. having this character immediately fall in love with him, which is, you know, and not address it from the, like, if you're going to do that, I feel like the angle should be Riker is falling in love with this alien character as he's wont to do, but it's not just a green alien with big boobs. You know, there's something more to address here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And they kind of, they don't really take the opportunity to do that, which, you know.
Right. She comes to him instead of meeting halfway. Like she, her culture or her view of it swings totally towards to Riker's view of what would be normal, as opposed to Riker having to reconsider what he's valuing going into their culture.
Right, which, and I think, I don't know, I wonder if the end feels less sledgehammery if you do that, because if you've got a character who is, for lack of a better term here, part of relatable to the norm of the people watching the show.
Yep.
And if you have him being the person who comes to this realization and relays this message at the end, I don't know if it has a bigger impact than if you just, you know, like, because I feel like the end gets into a little bit of Angel One territory where it's like, we just took this concept and we're like, oh, what if we just switch it and like do it backwards?
Sure. Yeah.
It gives us a perfect avenue to talk about all of the complications and make it more relatable and put the people watching in the seat of the person who is being oppressed in this situation. But I don't know. I don't think it's completely – I give them an A for effort,
yeah.
But I don't know if they really, you know, stuck the landing
so
much.
Yeah, and yeah, that's true. Well, I think that's a good point in the show to get to final thoughts. So I'm going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back and give our final thoughts and ratings for The Outcast.
How long to the fueling system, Mr. Data?
At warp 6, 53 hours, sir.
Commander?
Captain?
Starfleet has sent a message asking us to proceed to the fueling system to negotiate a trade agreement.
Yes, sir.
I didn't know when to tell them we would be there. Is our business with the Chennai finished?
Finished, sir.
Very well. Ensign, take us out of orbit. Set a course for the Phelan system, warp 6.
Aye, sir.
Engage.
So you're just talking about how you give him an A for effort, but the execution might not be there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably true. I think that the idea here is pretty interesting. I don't even know if the execution is super flawed. It's just not as they didn't go with as far with the concept as, not that they should have, but you'd probably would expect them to. Although I don't think that mm-hmm. it's in the tone of this show to go farther than where they went with it. Mm-hmm, and I don't mm-hmm. think that they did a disservice to anybody with where they went. It's just
no, I don't think so.
It's just maybe slightly unsatisfying as a narrative. So, what's your overall sort of final thoughts opinion about this one?
I don't know. I feel like you summed it up pretty well. I feel like, you know, like I said, I wish they had pushed it, but I feel like the fact that they're doing this when they're doing it is pretty impressive.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, as far as rating goes, I would actually give this one a 4.
Okay.
Because I feel like this is whether or not it's the one of the better executed or whatever episodes, I do think this is a pretty interesting episode and it's one you should watch.
Yeah, yep.
If only to see what they tried to do. Because I don't know. I don't think they ever – do they ever touch on this the sexuality stuff ever again in Star Trek?
The other series do it.
They do?
Yeah, they don't do it with – TNG. I don't think TNG has another episode that does this,
mm-hmm.
But they do it in other Star Trek series. So it's not an issue that they frequently come back to. Obviously, it's. I think you get to do this once per series. You know, it's that kind of a story where you, because if you do it again, it just becomes odd in a weird way. It's like, well, it's because it's so clear of an issue that the redundancy is very immediate when you do it again.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, you would think that given the, ideal future that Star Trek represents, that they would have some sort of acknowledgement of at least some of their crew members being gay or something, but they don't. They really don't.
That is the weirdest part, that there hasn't been there's not been a gay regular cast member. I think Fuller has said that he's going to have that in his new show. One of the cast members will be gay, or at least their sexuality will be not heterosexual, however he handles that. I think that's that's obviously a place to go. There's a ton of different characters you can throw into the show and have the stories. We're just at a point in TV where the statement won't be the same. You know what I mean? Because all my favorite shows now have gay characters in it. So it's not like they...
And I can tell that you hate it.
I have worse reaction. I'm just like, oh, so many gay characters everywhere. They give it the heebie-jeebies. No, it's it's a part of now. It's a part of the sort of normal TV. You know, the what was that show on HBO about the San Francisco group of gay guys? I can't remember. I think it just got canceled. But
I don't know.
It just got ended. I think, but it got critical ratings and everything like that. It's just I think it's just the times have changed. So I don't know if it'll be nice to have a character like that on the show, but I don't know. It won't have the impact that. It would have in an earlier time.
If they had a character like that in TNG, that would have been huge.
Yes, yeah, it would have, because no one here is really outside the norm. You know, maybe Worf, but he's just kind of aggressive. Like that's his.
Yeah.
There's no characters that really push the boundaries, which I guess they could do. I think I'm going to give this one a 3, but I can understand a 4. It's just the 4 was ethics, I think. They're both very kind of similar episodes. It's like a very talky episode about an issue. Mm-hmm. It's tough. I'll give it a strong 3. I don't think there's anything really wrong with this episode. I don't mind watching it. It gets better. It's much better in the beginning than it eventually unfolds into, just because I don't like the ending monologue scene. I don't think it's very well done. But outside of that, I think it's a pretty strong, you know, good episode that's I would recommend people watch. It's got that. It's probably more important than it is good.
Yeah. One thing I forgot to mention about the ending is I do like that they don't her big statement does not sway the court.
Yes.
I think that's another indictment of the system there. I don't know why anyone would read that as being somehow pro whatever the system's argument
right,
is.
Right, yeah. They do their best to fake you out because they fade to commercial right after her speech. So you're like, oh, this is 90s TV drama. Like, she's obviously swayed them to completely fix their society. And they come back and she's like, well, that was a nice talk, but no, you're still going to undergo this psycho whatever therapy.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's a really interesting thing that they come back with, too, where it's like, well, no, obviously she's saying this. She's sick.
Right.
And it's like, oh, gee, I mean, that's pretty, pretty heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, I think it's solid. I think it's worth watching.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Well, guys, thanks very much for listening. If you enjoyed the content today, you're on YouTube, a like and a comment's appreciated. If you're on iTunes, a rating and review helps get the show out there. That was good. We're actually in the good portion of season 5 now. It was a rough stretch, but we're flying out. Clay's going to be back for Cause and Effect
oh,
in
yeah.
the next episode. So we will see you then.